Pratt Reel 4.
Which I proved myself, because I went out on patrol the first night we were there, and I went about 900 yards straight ahead and found no German trenches. I came back wondering what the devil had happened, you see. And then we found afterwards, as I say, that the line had curved down to our line and then back again to the German line, and that I had been going forward in the, what you may say, in the big gap, which hadn't been filled by the Germans at the far end.
I've heard of a number of examples of the artillery shelling our own troops. I wonder what kind of relationship this created between the infantry and the artillery as a result.
Well, we never suffered from being shelled by our own troops, thank heaven. What we did complain about was that our artillery would go and shell the enemy trenches, and the enemy artillery would retaliate on ours. And we used to say to them, if you want to do any shelling, why don't you shell the German artillery and leave us alone, you see. But we did, one thing we did like in the artillery, when we were in the Bluff later on, we had a battery of French 75s behind us. And my God, they were wonderful. They're very low trajectory shell. You got to keep your head out, just skim the top of your trench and biff into the German trench. But they gave you a tremendous feeling of confidence the way they went over.
Now, this position on the Ypres Menin Road was one of holding the line. There was no major attack at the period you were there. Could you tell me a bit about the routine of this job? What would the average day be like for you?
Well, the average day in the only bit of the trenches was just practically doing nothing, except perhaps filling a few sandbags to strengthen a bit of the parapet of the trench. But of course, there had to be always somebody on sentry go all the time and on each section of the trench. Apart from that, trench life was extremely dull. You simply slept, wrote letters, except when you're on that sort of duty.
It was, of course, while you were here that you had a rather unfortunate experience when the German artillery ranged onto your platoon while you were in the trenches.
Yes.
Tell me about that.
That was the... I was, when I'd been commissioned, I was put in command of number 13 platoon. And from the time I took it over on March the 13th until we went up there at the beginning of, end of May, that I hadn't had a single casualty in my platoon. Well, we were put in to hold a position about 200-300 yards in front of the main line, and we were in the garden in front of a farm building, the garden being on the German side. We had a trench there, quite a good trench. We had a machine gun post in the corner of the hedge to defend it. Well, it was all quiet in the morning, beautiful May morning, Sunday I think it was. And then, about breakfast time, the Germans started shelling with whiz-bangs. And for a start, the whiz-bangs started going through the wall of the building behind us, which of course causes great amusement. But not for very long, because they soon started dropping the range and they started falling into the trench. Actually knocked out our machine gun. And suddenly there I had a signaller said, "Wanted on the phone, sir." I just went into the dugout and just picked it up, and it was a commanding officer. He said, "Are you having a rough time, are you?" And just as he said that, it was bang behind me. I found a shell had burst just where I'd been standing before, killing a Jamaican fellow. And I told him what we were having a bad time, and I said, "A lot of casualties." So he said, "Can you get them out of that?" So I said, "I'll try." So I crept out through the grass in the garden, thinking I'd be quickly covered. And one of the privates came with me. Poor fellow, he got hit and got killed. And I got through, got onto the road, and found the conclusion was quite impossible to get out. because anywhere we got out, we'd be in full view of the Germans, so we had to stick it out. I think I lost about 13, 14 men that day.
Why were your casualties so high?
Because we were in this little camp trench, and they were which was on a a normal sized garden. It was no bigger than a normal sized garden. And once the Germans got onto the range, you see, these whiz bangs, quite an explosive charge in them.
I was wondering what the necessity was for the entire platoon to actually be in the trench.
Lord knows, it was absolutely stupid being up there. Who thought of it, I don't know. Because we could be spotted, and it was obviously we were in a place where we could be blown to hell without any chance of getting out. And we couldn't have helped very much. We could have helped in an attack, as we were facing that way and that way. We could have produced an enfilade fire, but we could have done that probably equally well by going forward when the attack came.
Now I wonder if, after the first German gas attack at Ypres, you recollect whether any steps were taken to develop any kinds of anti-gas equipment, safety equipment?
Yes. Speaking from the point of view of those of us who were in the front, we got what they called a veil respirator, which really consisted of a woman's veil filled with cotton waste, that sort of stuff, impregnated with sodium hyposulfate, which is absorbs chlorine, and that you're supposed to tie around your mouth and your nose. But quite frankly, it was about as much use as a sick headache. They gave a demonstration in order to show how useful it was, and it had been arranged to show how...
What? Sorry, carry on.
They said to give a demonstration to show how useful it was, and I said, had the demonstration been arranged to show how useful it was, it couldn't have been more successful. We went back behind, right away back behind Ypres, and they had a trench, and at the entrance to the trench was a cylinder of chlorine, belching out chlorine gas. You had to put on this respirator thing and go through past the chlorine cylinder into the trench. Well, no gas mask, even the latest final gas mask, could have stood that concentration of chlorine. And of course, there, what we saw was a whole lot of senior officers, generals of all sorts, coming out, coughing their guts out as a result of the chlorine. In fact, I got a whiff myself, which kept me down for 3 or 4 hours afterwards before I could move.
Yes. Now, it was about this time that the special brigade was created specifically for the purpose of developing British gas operations. Yeah. I wondered, with your training as a chemist, whether you tried to join this.
What happened, I was acting company commander, and we were in support, where we'd been, across the Menin Road, and reached me, usual sort of notice. One, any volunteers for captive balloons. Two, any trained chemists who are wanted for a special gas brigade. So I went to the commanding officer, Tommy Ogilvie, and said, nobody's interested in the captive observation balloons. As regards chemists, I said, I'm a trained chemist myself, and I've got at least half a dozen more in the company. You want me to submit their names? He said, I don't want my men to go into these goddamn cushy jobs. You'll render a nil return, which, as an obedient officer, I did. As a matter of fact, it wasn't a cushy job, the special brigade, as it turned out, nor did it really need chemists. Their main job was really to carry gas cylinders into and out of the trenches and to operate them when the gas attack took place. In fact, any ordinary individual could have done that. Which brings up the story, further story, about a staff officer was issuing instructions for a gas attack, and he detailed 2 men for each cylinder to carry it up into the trench, and 3 men carrying it back after the gas attack. So somebody said to him, why this? Ah, well, he said, you see, after the gas attack, the cylinders will be empty. There'll be no gas in them, so they'll be heavier, and therefore you'll need three men instead of two.
He thought it was hydrogen that would sort of float the cylinder.
No, in any case, even to be hydrogen. Even to be hydrogen, hydrogen weighs.
Yes, of course.
The gas doesn't...
I wonder whether you got any information at the time about the way the selection of chemists for the special brigade worked. What did it prove to be a good way of developing the special brigade or not, with a concentration of very highly trained specialised chemists?
I think the whole thing was absolutely misconceived, and a tremendous number of very valuable chemists served and served well in that brigade when they could have been employed much more usefully back in this country in our explosive and chemical factories. Because I said there was work for a few chemists in the way of advisors and next with gas masks and so on later on. But there was no real need for a special brigade of the sort they had.
Well, the next subject I want to raise with you is the operation you were involved in June 1915, namely the attack on Y Wood.
Yeah.
Which overall operation was this attack a part of?
It was really an isolated operation itself.
Mm-hmm.
The idea being to try and straighten out the line. Remember, I explained to you before how it had bent away back.
Go through that again for me.
As I explained before, the line had got bent very far back from Hoo's Chateau. And starting in Sanctuary Wood, it came right away back, across the main road, then forward again into Y Wood, you see. So there was a big salient there on the German side. So the object of the attack, which was quite a short attack on Y Wood, was to recapture Y Wood and to be able to straighten the line between there and Sanctuary Wood, which would have included Hoo's Chateau, you see.
Good, I understand. Now, perhaps you could give me as much detail as you can remember about your part in that operation.
Well, we were not in the actual attack. We were in support. And the attack went off after what to us then seemed a fine artillery bombardment, but I gather it could be just nothing compared with what was later on. And the lads got forward and captured Y Wood, and all seemed to be going well. And then the Germans apparently counterattacked, and we were ordered to go up and take over from the Y Wood. Somebody had arranged for a trench to be dug from our front line up to Y Wood, and they dug it absolutely straight towards the Germans, with the result that the Germans soon got onto this, saw us that we were advancing up the trench, and started firing high explosive shrapnel down it, and laid out a very large number. A man in front of me was killed. I got a bit of shrapnel on my leg and that, and about half a dozen others were killed. It'd be a damn sight better if we'd reverted to the open warfare method and gone across the top over the open ground. But you see, as I said, having been in the trenches all that time, we stuck to the trench, where it'd been safer to have gone over the open.
That's very interesting indeed.
So
there were no traverses in the trench at
no,
all?
No, it was somebody who dug straight forward.
Mm.
Dug as quickly as they could.
Whilst you were in France, was this lesson learned, do you think, and the trenches became regularly and consistently traversed to prevent this kind of difficulty?
Oh, the trenches which we occupied were always traversed. But this was rather a special trench, really, leading forward from our own trench towards the enemy, where I suppose they thought that the quicker we get it made, the better, and therefore the straight line is the quickest way.